Those of us who are parents seem to have a never-ending stream of worries as we raise our kids. One of the biggest fears we have is wondering if our young are going to be strong enough to avoid the many dangerous addictive substances that seem to be so easily available in our society. Addictions range from tobacco to alcohol to prescription drugs to street drugs, and kids are exposed to many myths and misconceptions about all of them. Well, how prevalent are these addictions and abuses? Well, here are some facts. Alcohol and drugs are the leading causes of crime among youth. Alcohol and drugs are the leading factors in teenage suicides. Here's another fact. More than 23 million people over the age of 12 are addicted to alcohol or other drugs, affecting millions more people. Now, think about that. The spouses, the children, the family, the friends, the neighbors, colleagues at work, and more. But here's one fact that gives hope. Not everyone uses drugs. Well, these are some of the issues we will discuss on tonight's Health Matters. I'm Kermit Poling, and I'm joined in the studio this evening by Dr. Jennifer Hodges Crowder, who's the program director of the Adolescent Treatment Center at CADA, the Council on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse of North Louisiana. Also by Dr. Lee Stevens, who's the medical director of the CADA Adolescent Treatment Center. And as always, your questions and comments are welcome. You can join in the conversation by giving us a call at 800-552-8502. That is 800-552-8502. And Dr. Crowder, Dr. Stevens, first of all, welcome to Health Matters.
Thank you for having us.
Glad to have you here. So I just quoted some facts here. Here's another one that I looked up from a recent survey of 12th graders. It said 53.3% claim that they've never used illegal drugs. Do you find in your experience that that's the case? Because my first inclination is thinking, all right, well, if you're asking kids if they're doing it, they're probably not telling the truth. But I don't know the circumstances of the actual survey. What's your experience in encountering young people and addictions?
Well, we have a significant number of children that come to us at the Council on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse with a wide range of substance-related problems, some who have just started experimenting all the way to full-blown addictions. And what we know from the national trends is that about 10% of 12th grade students are actually using drugs on a daily basis, and about 20 to 25% use on a regular basis, 1 to 2 times a week. So I would suspect that those numbers are pretty low by that self-report, 50% you just mentioned.
Do you think that in our particular area that we have a different rate than perhaps other places like up in the Northeast or all of that, or do you think our area pretty much tracks with the rest of the country?
I think that we pretty much track with the rest of the country. You generally see consistencies across the adolescent, teenage age groups. Mm-hmm. We do know that in the rural areas in Louisiana, Mississippi, Arkansas, the average age that one begins to use illegal drugs is younger when you're dealing with lower socioeconomic backgrounds or rural areas.
Do you think that's also changed over time? And this is, you know, we always say, well, in the old days, you know, the good old days when we were kids, things were a little bit different. And of course, a lot of the substances that kids get addicted to now are different. The drugs are different, at least some of them. Do you think there's more of a tendency for this situation? Do you think there are more causes for concern than there were in the past?
Well, I think that the trends for different types of drug use change over time. We certainly see some decrease now in the number of kids that are using cocaine, for example. Mm-hmm. Those numbers have gone down in the last 20 years, but the number of kids that are smoking marijuana on a regular basis has gone up. So I think it depends on what type of substance that you're talking about and what the national focus is. Primarily. Interestingly, there are fewer kids smoking tobacco products today than there were 10 to 15 years ago, but more smoking marijuana.
So. That probably because, of course, there's been a national educational effort on the dangers of tobacco smoke. Do you think that directly affects that?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. The National Institute of Health and the Substance Abuse Mental Health Association that does a lot of research in our country shows that it is a nice impact to do prevention campaigns and to provide the education.
It's Just wanted to check one thing here.
Yeah.
And that's about smoking. And we talk about, you know, now they may be smoking more marijuana, but that's a misperception that somehow smoking marijuana is safer. If burning anything and inhaling that into your lungs is not a good thing. Whether it's tobacco or marijuana, there's the risk of TARS and things leading to cancer. So I think it's a misperceived risk being greater in cigarettes.
What are some of the issues during adolescence? And that's really what we're primarily focusing on in this program. Not that people of all ages don't become addicted, but your specialty is adolescence, and that's this program. What are some of the issues that can put a child at risk for using drugs like marijuana or alcohol, for that matter?
Well, one of the biggest risk factors is the family history of substance use. Other factors, if the child feels or the adolescent feels depressed, if they're having problems with self-esteem, and peer pressure is always a factor, especially in the middle adolescence. Mm-hmm. and later adolescence.
You mentioned family history. Are you thinking in terms of, I mean, do these things tend to run genetically with addictions, or is it more a matter of the attitude in the household?
I would say both.
Absolutely. Both can play a part and contribute to the risk factors for children. We do know that children of parents who have addiction problems are more likely to develop addiction problems as well. And when kids live in a home where it's common practice to drink alcohol excessively or irresponsibly or to smoke marijuana or use other drugs in an illegal manner, then they're more likely to model those behaviors. It becomes a normal part of life to them.
Yeah, I think we've all heard of families where, you know, the younger kids, you know, maybe they're in their mid-teens, you know, the parents are okay with them drinking, maybe perhaps as long as it's in the house or that type of thing. But that really does lead to addictive behavior, doesn't it?
Absolutely. It becomes a risk factor. When parents or guardians are permissive about illegal use of a chemical, and if you're allowing a 16-year-old to consume alcohol, you're allowing them to engage in illegal behavior, because in Louisiana, the age of consent is 21. And there are some very valid reasons for that. So you're condoning that behavior, and we know that the younger a kid is when they start using these substances, the more likely they are to begin to abuse them and the more likely they are to try other drugs.
Right.
So it is a dangerous attitude to have, for sure.
What are some of the other health problems, particularly mental health problems, that are associated with this risk of young alcohol or drug use?
Well, some of the health problems as far as mental could be depression, which you mentioned earlier. It's most often associated when there is a suicide, drugs or alcohol are involved. Also, they can get into problems with cognitive functioning. They start having failing grades and not participating in their normal activities in school and home and church.
Well, that kind of leads me to a question about what parents might look for. But before we do, I'd like to give our number again, because we certainly would like for you to participate in this evening's discussion. The number to call, 1-800-552-8502. Or you can, if you'd like, if you don't want to go on the air, that's fine. You can just let our phone screeners know what your question is. But we'd like to feature you on the air, 800-552-8502. And again, my guests are Dr. Jennifer Hodges Crowder and Dr. Leif Stevens. And we do actually have our phone call, our first call for the evening. So we're going to just go right on into this first call. This is Randall from Shreveport. Go ahead with your question.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
A number of states, marijuana is becoming legal as a recreational product. It's being used medically as well in a number of states. And 20 years ago, people were incarcerated for possessing it. So what's the message that we should be sending our teens today in terms of marijuana? Is it a medication, or is it an addictive substance, or What's that? What's their take on that?
Well, I think that's a very good question. It's one that we discuss quite a bit with parents and teens alike, is that there are medicinal uses for marijuana under certain circumstances, and although it may be legal in certain states, it is not legal in Louisiana, and nor is it legal for kids to use, recreational or otherwise. Mm-hmm. What we know about the chemicals in marijuana is that they are have addictive properties, and that they can, the younger that you begin to use that chemical, the more likely you are to be addicted to it. And as we have learned more about neurobiology over the last 10 or 15 years, we understand that the adolescent brain is not fully developed and continues to develop until well into adulthood, around 24 or 25. Mm-hmm. So when you put these chemicals into the adolescent brain, it can cause some problems with growth and development, with cognitive functioning, with long-term memory.
Yeah.
Even in states where marijuana is legal, the legal age of consent is still 21.
Right. So is it specifically an issue of the developing brain? Because I know a lot of, and this is, again, maybe one of those myths that we hear about, that marijuana is, quote-unquote, not addictive, but clearly on some level it must be. Is that a chemical thing? Is that psychological? How does that work?
Absolutely. Marijuana is addictive from a biological standpoint, from a chemical standpoint, from a psychological standpoint. People can become addictive to the feeling that they encounter when they use the drug, and it affects them socially. It can be a social lubricant in the same way that alcohol is. So people who have anxiety problems or depression problems may smoke marijuana to ease some of those symptoms, and then they become dependent on that drug to change the way they feel, to deal with those emotions that are distressing to them, and it becomes a vicious cycle where they smoke more and more to deal with those problems, and then if they try to stop smoking, then all of those feelings are overwhelming, and they can't stop.
Right. The number to call to participate in our Health Matters this evening is 800-552-8502, and we're specifically looking at adolescent addictive behavior, and your questions or perhaps experiences would be welcome in this program. One of the more recent items that has been a lot in the news, of course, aside from marijuana, are the synthetic variations on this, whether they're intended to bypass the harm of marijuana or just bypass the law is questionable. But how, in comparison, in terms of the dangers involved in marijuana, how does that compare? Do they have specifically more dangers involved? What's the issue there?
Well, they're actually more dangerous. The big thing about marijuana is that it's not so much that you're going to get into really serious trouble, other than your life is probably going to go off track. Teenagers, they go out and experience things. They should be hopefully interested in interacting with their peers and learning new things. And what marijuana does is often it causes them to be to lose that drive. You know, they won't be playing sports, or they won't be going to school making good grades. They'll withdraw and not really living up to their potential, whether it be in sports, in learning, and academic performance, and in their social relationships. But the problem with the artificial marijuana, so-called bath salts, is this really tightly binds to the cannabinoid receptors. And this really can cause serious dysfunction and mental illness. Kids can become psychotic. It's a difficult psychosis to treat. And it's much more serious than just smoking marijuana.
And it's pervasive. It takes a while for those symptoms to subside, even if the child is not using the synthetic marijuana. One of the things that we have really seen happening with the children that come into our program for treatment that use synthetic marijuana is that they have a lot of irritability, a lot of unstable moods. They're very angry, quick-tempered. And this is, you know, weeks to months after they've stopped using the drugs. It seems to have a long-term effect that they don't easily get over. The thing that I especially find scary about synthetic marijuana, and I tell parents this all the time, is that we don't know what chemicals are in that manufactured substance. We really don't know. We don't have a lot of research on it. We don't know what kind of long-term damage we're dealing with here. And the kids will tell you that they feel like they don't think as quickly as they used to, or they're not able to answer questions in the same fashion they used to. So it's very scary because we really don't know all of the ramifications of using the bath salts.
My guest this evening, Dr. Jennifer Hodges Crowder, who's the program director of the Adolescent Treatment Center on the from the Council on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse of North Louisiana, what we typically call CADA. Also, Dr. Lee Stevens, he's the medical director of the CADA Adolescent Treatment Center. The number, if you'd like to join in the conversation this evening, 800-552-8502. We do have our next caller online from Lufkin. This is Mike. Mike, go ahead with your question. Hello, Mike. Are you there? Well, Mike may have left. What are the signs that someone has become addicted? In other words, when is someone actually considered to be addicted?
That term is sometimes misused, but generally we use the term dependent is when something a drug become pervasively affects someone's life. They're focused on obtaining the drug. The drug interferes with their activities in school, home, or church, or social life, and dependence implies more than just having psychological withdrawal side effects if you stop the drug. Abuse is sometimes used as a term that the person has a problem with the drug, and it's often seen as a lesser
problem,
yeah. But the problem is, people that abuse drugs, we often call it now substance use disorder, because you can, at one point in your life, you can be abusing the drug. Another point in life, you can be dependent on the drug. You can fall back, and you can maybe practice sobriety for a while, but then lapse into abuse or dependence. So it's usually the patient or the individual or the child will cross the spectrum.
Well, and with children in particular, you know that they've really developed a dependence on a drug when their primary focus becomes that drug above all else. Mm-hmm. You may have a child who has been real involved in sports all of their lives, and then all of a sudden they're not going to practice, they're not interested in participating anymore. You may have a kid that had a decent disposition that was actively involved in family life. All of a sudden, he don't want to be around anybody. He doesn't want to listen, doesn't want to follow directions, just wants to go. And the secrets with teenagers become very large. They hide their behavior, and they try to push people who care about them away. Mm-hmm. The drug just takes precedence over everything else.
Well, a lot of drug use among young people is also happens, I think, because of peer pressure. So we know this is dangerous, and at least on some level, I imagine the kids who become involved at least on some level have heard that this is dangerous, and yet there's still a lot of pressure from friends, you know, parties, this type of thing. What does a parent do, or a guardian, to protect their kids? And how do kids protect themselves?
Well, I think the first thing that parents have to do is be honest and acknowledge that these problems exist, that these temptations exist, and talk about the realities of the situation, and help kids find solutions when they are put in the position to feel pressure to do something. Mm-hmm. You know, the drugs are out there, the alcohol is out there, there are other people that you may encounter, there are places you may go where this is going to be available, what's going to be your exit strategy? You know, these are the reasons why it's not a good idea to engage in this behavior. And if you're somewhere where you feel like you don't have any choice, let's talk about an exit strategy. You know, how are you going to get out of the situation? Mm. How can I help you?
Right. Makes sense. The number to call to participate tonight, 800-552-8502. We'll try another caller here. This is Karen from Shreveport. Go ahead with your question or comment.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question has to do with video game addiction. I have two boys that absolutely love video games. I think they would sit there all day, literally not eat, you know, if I didn't make them get off the computer. So it's constantly, you know, me forcing them off the computer, you know. I didn't know if that's something, if it's off topic, you know, I realize it's not drug addiction, but I was just wondering if you could, you know, give me some tips or your opinion. They think I'm being irrational.
No, you're not. First of all, video game addiction is very real, and anything that get in the brain fast and get out fast can be addictive. Anything that feels good, even pain, can be addictive. Certainly video games are designed to give you instant reward for the actions in the game. And if you find that the games are taking more and more time, kids often get wrapped up in it. They can get on internet gaming where they're doing it with other people in other states, countries, and to the point of not spending any time at home with a family and it's, you have to kind of step back and take a look at what games are they playing. There's a reason some games are labeled M for mature audiences, and you do have to set a time limit. And for any kind of screen time, whether it's a computer, a video game, television.
It's real important when you're talking about situations when what is too much, that you remember that kids don't process and look at the world the same way that we do as adults. Their brains are still developing. They're still learning how to reason and how to prioritize. And it's only natural that they want to do what they enjoy the most often. So as parents, we really have to moderate their activities, especially with any kind of screen time, like Dr. Stevens said, because it is so easy to get sucked into that and lose track of time and have that become your world. The whole world is open to kids nowadays. They can talk to other people. They can interact in different worlds, and to pull them back into reality, video games in themselves are not bad, but like everything else, that is a leisure time activity, and that time is limited. And we still need to have social relationships. We still need to be a part of the family. You still have to go to school. You can't stay up all night. You can't play video games through supper. Video games are not a babysitter while you're at the restaurant. They're not entertainment, you know, in the car, that sort of stuff. I think as a society, we really have to stop and look at that too, and how much time is realistic. Mm-hmm. I think that the actual research now is suggesting 1 to 2 hours of screen time a day, which if you think about in all of our lives, that seems like a much shorter amount of time than most of us even have a TV on. So we just have to really watch and make sure that it doesn't take over all the other life areas.
The video game question brought up another thought in my mind, another question, just from doing a little research for this show and some of the discussions that we were having on the production staff of some things that have become, that we've become aware of that frankly just amaze me. Some of them are things like eyeballing alcohol, inhaled alcohol. There was a star of a popular TV show, I think Teen Mom, who admitted to chewing or eating pain patches. as part of her addiction. There's now some sort of digital addiction using sound that kids are trying to get high from. As a sound engineer, this one perplexes me because I've heard all kinds of sound. But it just seems that there are just a segment of kids that are just looking for any possible way to get some sort of stimulation. Why is that?
Well, these children are experiencing the world differently, as I said, from you or I. We have some amazing discoveries in the world of neuroscience these days, and how the teenage brain is in constant development and pruning. All of these different connections are going on in the brain, and when they run into something that feels good, well, let's do some more of that because that's really great. And teaching them boundaries and responsibilities, and that there are some things that may feel good, but that really aren't good for us in the long term, mm-hmm. and that there are things that we can enjoy and that we like to do, but we can't do those and neglect everything else.
Sure.
And again, you know, you're dealing with an immature brain, and teenagers don't always look like children, but they are. They can certainly throw fits like some sometimes, but often, you know, they are fighting for some independence, moving towards figuring out who they really want to be and where their place is in the world, and we have the privilege of helping them through that journey. And we also have the responsibility to help them recognize the dangers in this world and that there are some things that impact us long term. And that's hard for a 14-year-old to understand,
sure.
you know, because there is a mentality that life is good and nothing bad's going to happen to me with some
sure.
kids.
Sure. We have another caller. This is Oliver from Alexandria. Go ahead with your question.
Yes, I know that there's a thing of privacy, but however, random drug testing in our schools, can it be used? Would it not be a good deterrent to the problem of drugs, et cetera, if there would be random testing and to help them know that there is an accountability for their lifestyle, even at the school?
Well, I think we have that going on at some level already. There are several parishes in Louisiana that cooperate with the juvenile justice system in their parish, where if a child is having problems with truancy at school, they're not coming to school when they're supposed to be, or they're having a lot of behavior problems at school, or they've even been caught at school with marijuana or alcohol, then there's actually a liaison officer from the sheriff's department or the probation and parole department,
mm-hmm.
Sometimes through a prevention program called FINS, Family in Need of Services,
mm-hmm.
Where they do and go visit with the children at school, and they do drug test them right there at school as a condition of their participation in that program. So while the actual school system itself is not doing any mandated drug testing, they are obtaining assistance from legal authorities to help track and monitor kids who are at risk of having problems.
And this sounds like it's a way of verifying that a particular child is continuing to participate in the program.
Sure.
It's kind of like a backup.
Sure. And it is a good deterrent on some levels, because there are kids who get it. You know, hey, if I keep smoking pot, then I can't play football anymore.
Sure.
Or I'm going to end up with a real probation officer and having to go before a judge once a month. And are they going to put me in a drug court program? Are they going to send me to drug treatment?
Right.
And it's not worth it. You know.
Sure.
So there are some kids that's a great deterrent. Unfortunately, there are other children who, no matter how much they want for it to work, it can't, because they have crossed those lines into substance abuse, addiction, and they can't stop. And these programs, these collaborations between, you know, the probation offices and the school systems help channel those children to places like the CADA Adolescent Treatment Center where they can get some help and learn how to stop those behaviors and prevent any more problems in their lives as a result of drug use.
All right. My guest, Dr. Jennifer Hodges Crowder with CADA, and also Dr. Lee Stevens with CADA. And we'll talk a little bit later about exactly what the Council on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse does and the various programs you have. We do have another caller on the line. The number to call, by the way, is 800-552-8502, 800-552-8502, so that you can participate in this evening's program. This is Vernon from Shreveport. Vernon, thank you for waiting for your question.
Good evening. I hope I'm not going to be repeating or off subject. I just tuned in. But, you know, you heard the old story about the canary in the coal mine. Mm-hmm. Well, our children are the canary in our society's mind. If you think about it, the children of today, they come home to an empty house because mama has to work, and they used to have to do it. And they can't get a job because somebody else, some adult who can't get any kind of real job, is now doing the jobs that they used to do. So you end up with a heck of a lot of unstructured time available to them. And you're going to, like the doctor said, you're going to do the thing that you enjoy doing the most. And when you're a teenager, I remember back in the Stone Age when I was a teenager, we always were wanting to try cigarettes and alcohol because that's what we saw our folks do. And that seemed like the way you proved your maturity is to strut around with a pack of Luckies twisted up in your shirt sleeve and drinking beer. And but that is nothing new to this whole world. The problem today is that so many things are available to them that are absolutely life-ending. As soon as you snort it, smoke it, or shoot it, you're finished. And, you know, the general person is, you know, some people can get off of crack and some people can get off meth, but God mighty, it's a horrible thing to see pictures of people who have been on meth a long time, and it's so easy to make, and it's all over the Internet. But so we have got ourselves set up that our children are going to be finding things like this to do to fill their time. And to try to fit in. And if you look at all the media that is constantly heaped on our kids because they're sitting there watching it either on the computer or on the television, it's sex, drugs, and violence. I mean, what is it? So, you know, you can't be shooting people all the time, but you can be high most of the time because mama's gone to work. When she gets home, she's going to be too damn tired to smell your breath or to smell the house. And so we've just got ourselves set up for a heck of a situation.
Will one of you have a comment about
that? I think Vernon has made some interesting points, and certainly something that we pay attention to a great deal in our treatment program for adolescents at CADA, and that we talk with parents about for their home care with their kids, is that consistency is very important and right. Structure is very important.
Right.
And you're dealing with teenagers who are trying to figure out what they like and what they don't like, and who have spent their entire lives following schedules that other people develop for them.
Mm-hmm.
And just because somebody turns 15 and moves from the 8th grade to the 9th grade into high school doesn't mean they don't need structure anymore.
Right. So just in that regard, what kind of advice? I mean, there are parents, they have to work. You know, we're
absolutely.
You know, we're in a situation where that's pretty common. I will say that was the case when I was a kid. And I suppose my addiction was probably watching science fiction television in the afternoons and get home from school.
Sure.
And did not do homework. But I mean, it's in a way sort of the same thing. But what can parents do? I mean, how do we solve that as an issue?
Well, one of the things is in general is structure, having a The more structure you can have for anyone, the better off they are, especially teenagers. Dr. Crowder already mentioned, you know, open communication, talking about problems with drugs, but also the, probably the two most important things are role modeling. You know, how do you behave around your kids, and do you show responsible behavior? You know, for instance, if you go to a party, do you give your keys to your partner or to your spouse, or do you try to drive? You know, doing things the right way. And
because kids, example is what you're saying.
By example, now kids model, and he brought that point up. Also, there's a hierarchy of harm, and there's certain things that are never okay, and there's certain things that are okay for adults to do, and it's sometimes hard to teach teenagers that, but that's one of the things you have to attempt to teach.
Absolutely, and Dr. Stevens mentioned that we as adults need to be responsible because teenagers especially are watching us, and those of us that have teenagers know that because they like to point out when we make mistakes, and they are going to be paying attention to what we do and what we say. And if we are talking with them about alcohol and the reasons why delaying alcohol use is important, and the reason why the drinking ages are what they are, and that the dangers of using illegal drugs, but then they see us doing it. Mm-hmm. Of course, our behavior condones the use of those chemicals. One of the big campaigns that we've had in our country in the last few years is encouraging parents to be responsible and aware of their prescription drug use. Because we've seen a trend in the rise of teenagers experimenting with prescription drugs, mm-hmm. Which is very dangerous and very harmful. And that we as the patients who are receiving these drugs or family members who are taking these medications for legitimate medical reasons need to be as responsible with those prescription medications as we would in securing our alcohol. Mm-hmm. So that we treat those drugs with respect, and we make sure that everybody understands that it's medication.
Right.
And it's not to be abused, and it is dangerous.
Well, one thing that came up in our discussion was something called a Skittle party, which when I first heard it, of course, the thing comes to mind is the candy. But in effect, these are parties where kids take whatever kind of prescription drugs they can bring from home, and they put them all together, and it's like a bowl of drugs, which just boggles the mind because it obviously, I mean, there's no way that I think that the kids wouldn't rationally think, if they had the rational mind in place, that there's got to be some danger involved, and
right.
Yet they do this.
Absolutely, and you use that key word rational. You know, yeah. You're expecting that this young, undeveloped, incomplete brain is actually going to be thinking along rational lines like
right.
You or I. And we see that with teenage behavior, even when it's not related to drug use. But there is a trend, and it's very disturbing, where kids are having these farm parties where they will take whatever prescription meds they can find at home or in relatives' homes, and they take the drugs and they swap them and they take them, or they, you know, you may have a child who has a legitimate mental health or learning problems such as attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, and they're prescribed medications for that. And some of those medications can be misused, and they may give those meds to one of their friends to try. Or they may not monitor their medication effectively and have those taken from them. And it's very scary because pain medications we often see abused, stimulant medications that are used for ADHD-type problems, and even some antidepressants that are used, if you don't have the problems that the medications are intended for, certainly there can be some significant side effects, but also it's very easy to overdose mm-hmm. on prescription pills because of the length of time it takes for the effect to occur from the drug kids are impulsive and they don't know what they're doing with these medications, and they're more likely to overdose on these.
Our Health Matters this evening, my guest, Dr. Jennifer Hodges Crowder, who's the program director at the Council on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse of North Louisiana, the Adolescent Treatment Center. Dr. Lee Stevens, who momentarily here has stepped out for a phone call.
Dr. Stevens is on call, as always.
He's on call, as he is, and I know he'll
be right back
in here,
yes,
shortly. But I do have some questions that have come via internet. And again, if you would like to be on the show this evening, the number to call is 800-552-8502. We can really lay your question into the booth if you'd like, or you can be on the air. This is from Sandy, and it doesn't say what town. It says, aside from drugs, cutting can also be an addictive behavior. And this is something that I only became aware of with my own son back when he was in high school, because it was something that I didn't even know existed. But evidently, it's more common than we think. What can parents do outside of professional counseling to help with this?
Cutting is certainly a behavior of concern, and it does become a coping mechanism that some kids will use when they are in pain. Children sometimes get overwhelmed emotionally, are unable to effectively identify their feelings or express their feelings, and in order to relieve that stress, they do things to themselves out of frustration and to obtain some sort of relief. And if they find that relief through that cutting behavior, then it becomes their coping skill.
The pain is.
The pain is the skill.
The emotional.
The pain, absolutely. And as Dr. Stevens mentioned earlier, even pain can become addictive. There's a certain part of your brain that is activated when you are in pain, and it increases awareness, and it stimulates different aspects of your brain that gives a little rush of some sort. So, yes, absolutely, they can get used to that and want that feeling repeatedly over and over. And when you're dealing with adolescents, aside from the normal differences in thought processing from an adult, teenagers tend to be impulsive. Mm-hmm. And we do have some teenagers who have impulse control problems that we can be considered to be at a clinical level. And ADHD is one of those. Mm-hmm. And we do know that kids who have ADHD problems or other impulse control problems are more likely to engage in high-risk behaviors like substance use, cutting behaviors, because they don't have that mechanism that helps you stop and think before you do things. So they may be more impulsive with the cutting, with the drinking, with sure. the drugs.
All right. You're a parent. You discover that your child is involved either with alcohol or drugs or perhaps cutting. What do you do? What do you recommend for parents to do first thing?
Well, the first thing I recommend that parents do when they have a concern, they find drugs in their child's bedroom or their find cut marks on their daughter's forearm or their son's leg, I think you should take it seriously. Mm-hmm. I think that you should understand that there is always concern and that you consult a professional as quickly as possible. And by that, I mean that you seek out even your pediatrician, if that's someone that you can get to the quickest, or you call CADA and say, you know, I found some drugs in my son's room and I want to come talk to somebody, and they will talk to you and guide you on what to do. With the cutting behaviors, you know, that becomes a serious situation because there's worry that a child may be a danger to themselves. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that's not a rational behavior, and that needs to be addressed very quickly with a medical professional to determine how serious and how much danger the child is in.
What if someone is in a difficult financial situation? They're concerned about cost them. They just don't have the resources to go and immediately see a physician. What resources are available in the community? And I know, of course, you know, CADA is here in the Shreveport-Bossier area, but we cover such a large area, and I don't know whether you also deal with people who are in the more rural areas
Sure.
or not, but what are some of the resources that are available?
There are several resources available to everybody. Of course, we have an 800 number where you can call and get information. The Louisiana State Office of Mental Health is available to answer questions 24 hours a day, 7 days a week regarding concerns about adolescents. There are a lot of people who have insurance but that don't have insurance that covers certain things. You still have that coverage. There's an 800 number you can call to your insurance company and tell them that you have these concerns and they can refer you to the right place. You know, as a nonprofit, CADA strives to provide services without exclusion in the community. And if we can't help, we will direct you to whatever is available. And, you know, in the state of Louisiana, we're fortunate that we have some programs that are designed to ensure that children don't go up without medical care, regardless of their insurance status or their financial situation. So a child should never be denied medical services. Right. And if it is a crisis situation where you're extremely concerned about your child's safety, you can go to the nearest emergency room and they will assess your child and they will work with you to help you find placement for that child.
Sure. You know, first off, you mentioned the 800 number for CADA. Do you happen to have that off the top of your head?
It's a brand new number.
Here comes the PDF. Okay.
Right. Let me get this up. Let me get this up on my phone and I'll get it for you.
Okay. Well, we can get that and we'll mention that during the show. We'll also put it up on our website along with the download for this program, because of course, if you're listening to it and you'd like to hear this later, or if you know someone that might be interested, they are available on our website at redriverradio.org. Just one question that came in from a caller. How are the addiction treatments different for young people versus the treatments for adults?
Well, often young kids don't have to be detoxed with other addictive substances. Often the addictive substance itself can just be stopped and they may be monitored closely. And so that simplifies the detox procedure.
Mm-hmm.
We do check their nutritional status. We do use vitamins sometimes. So that's the good news about adolescents. They're pretty hardy and pretty healthy in general.
Yeah, they're a little more resilient. They can get over some of the physical difficulties quicker than adults can.
The number to participate, we have about 10 minutes or so left in the program. You can call in with your question at 800-552-8502. That's, of course, our 800 number, 800-552-8502. Do you think addiction frequently or this dependent behavior in children and teens, that it goes unnoticed? And for that matter, what do you do if you know someone and you suspect, but you're not the parent, and maybe the parents don't know, and you think they might be in denial? Then what do you do? So two questions there.
That's difficult. The first thing I would probably try to do is talk to the parents.
Mm-hmm.
And what was the other question?
Well, it's just how often does addiction or addictive behavior, dependency, go unnoticed, do you think? Because we're talking about, of course, treating kids, and we recognize that. But
I think it goes off unnoticed pretty often. It's usually a gradual process, and you know, the kid, if that's using drugs, maybe he'll just start off by becoming more irritable. You'll notice they're not doing the usual things that they used to do. Then they stop doing. They start doing things like sleeping late, missing classes, absences from after school activities. Then then maybe develop truancy. So it's a gradual process, and sometimes you really don't notice it for a good half a year.
So it's almost like it happens so slowly that right. it's hard to recognize.
Now, having said that, that's not, of course, not always true. We talked a little bit a while ago about using assortment of prescription medicines sometimes taken from the cabinet in the bathroom.
Right.
I mean, you know, it's not uncommon that teenagers get an assorted collection of prescription medicines, right. put them in a bowl, and have a farm party. And
we were talking a little bit about that.
Yeah.
A little bit earlier, and it just, you know, I think that's not something that people recognize as really happening. Not that, of course, it doesn't. But you know, my first reaction when I first heard about it, well, who'd think? I mean, these are dangerous drugs, and but clearly, you know, as you had mentioned earlier, I mean, teens aren't thinking rationally; they're just thinking about the adventure, I guess.
The adventure mm-hmm. and the instant gratification. Life is just different. They have a lot of opportunity and a lot of options to be different. They push for independence, and sometimes that's just a way to try something new. I work with a lot of children who have pretty serious drug and alcohol problems, and I haven't had one of them tell me yet that they intended for that to become a problem.
Mm-hmm.
They just were trying something different. They were
right.
trying something new, and I think you know, one of the key factors as a parent or a concerned adult about the kids in your lives, if you're concerned about how do I identify possible drug or alcohol problems, is you're always looking to see if there are changes in this child. Their attitude is just different than it used to be all the
right.
time, and they're not enjoying life on a level that they used to. They're withdrawing from important relationships in their lives. They used to always talk to you, and they're not talking to you anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Any of those symptoms are of concern and
sure.
could be indicators.
Right. I do have a question from earlier in the show that the caller, they don't want to go on the air, and that's fine. They want to know, can long-term cocaine or marijuana use cause genetic damage that can in turn affect children?
I always tell people when I get asked a question like that, anything can cause anything, but we don't think those types of drugs or experimenting with those kind of drugs cause genetic problems. There are some drugs that can cause genetic problems, and there's some drugs that are very harmful even for the developing brains, and those are things
right.
like solvents, people huffing aerosols. Gasoline, things like that.
Okay. And then we have another caller who, were we able to look up the 800 number?
Yes.
All right. Let's,
the new CADA, the CADA 800 number is 1-800-622-2255.
2255. And we're going to put this up on our website as well for those of you who want to download the program or just get more information. Again, that number, 800-622-2255. And while we're on the subject of CADA, and you're both involved in the Adolescent Treatment Center, why don't you just talk a little bit about the programs that you have available?
CADA is, as I mentioned, a nonprofit agency that has been in the community since the 1950s.
Mm-hmm.
And it provides substance abuse prevention and education services to the community at large. And we also provide treatment services. And we provide those for adults and adolescents through outpatient clinic services. And we have a medically assisted detox program for adults, as well as an intensive residential treatment program and a residential treatment program that's a step down from the intensive level that allows individuals to continue with relapse prevention training and life skills building And we have our adolescent treatment program as well as the outpatient services for adolescents. CADA has a pretty unique program in the area as well for women with children. It's mm-hmm. a family program, and it is a wonderful way for women to get help for drug or alcohol problems and provide safety and treatment with their children at the same time. We know that women often don't seek help for drug or alcohol problems at the same rate as men because they have children that they care for.
Right.
And, you know, it's hard to go to treatment to an inpatient treatment program or to a residential treatment program because there's no one to take care of your kids. So with this program, the women and the children go into the residential setting. They stay there for several months. These ladies learn about their drug use, the problems that led to it, how to correct those behaviors in the future, and how to be a parent and how to help their children learn and grow from the experience as well.
Sure. On the other side of that, I mean, you're talking about parents who may have problems and helping them if they've got a family. What about the families that have children with problems? What about the support for the rest of the family to deal with it?
Well, anytime you're dealing with a substance-related disorder, with an addiction problem, it's not just about the person using. Mm-hmm. It's about the whole family. That drug use impacts everybody in the family, and those that care about the drug user become just as distraught by drug use as the drug user himself. So certainly we have support services for family members and teaching them how to be supportive of the recovery process, what their role can be, and how they can help establish boundaries to develop healthier relationships with each other. And that's for adults and adolescents.
Sure. We have just about a minute here left in the program. My guests, Dr. Jennifer Hodges Crowder and Dr. Lee Stevens, is there anything else that you would like to add or anything that you want to focus on for our audience on this subject, or something that they should be thinking about or watching about just be aware of?
Well, I think it's real important as a parent when you're dealing with adolescents that any time you encounter your child with alcohol or drugs, or you suspect that they are using, that it is a serious issue. It's not just teenage experimentation. It's not just something to blow off as boys being boys or girls being girls, because it's a high-risk behavior and it can lead to problems for them. And speaking with them and getting the appropriate help to prevent any long-term problems is always important.
Okay. Dr. Stevens, anything you want to add?
I just always want to put in a plug for safety. I think the caller earlier mentioned about cutting.
Mm-hmm.
I take all self-abuse seriously, and I recommend they get help right away. And certainly any comments about threats to harm themselves or threats to hurt others spoken by a child or an adult should be taken seriously and addressed immediately.
All right. My guests again, Dr. Lee Stevens and Dr. Jennifer Hodges Crowder, both with the Adolescent Treatment Center at the Council on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse of North Louisiana. Health Matters is a program for informational purposes only. For all health questions, you should consult a physician or health professional. The show will be available for download from redriverradio.org. Health Matters is a production of Red River Radio. The producer is Renee Moran, with production assistance from Henry Edwards and Daniel Gordy. Support for this program comes from the Knoll Foundation and also from the Community Foundation of North Louisiana. You can download a copy again from our website, redriverradio.org. I'm Kermit Poling. Good night. And this is member-supported Red River Radio, a public radio service of LSUS. You're tuned to KDAQ, Shreveport-Bossier City, KLSA, Alexandria, Pineville, KBSA, El Dorado, Magnolia, and KLDN, Lufkin, Nacogdoches.